Moments past the scheduled start time of 12, about 5 after the hour. Apologies, but I've been working on biochar course in between, like, the time that I get the show ready and then the time the show goes live. And there's sometimes when you're kind of in a flow like that, if you've got to be 5 minutes late, you got to be 5 minutes late. Because if you get out of the flow, it's hard to get back into the flow. And I had a slide I was finishing up for you guys for that course, which should be due out in about a month. Anyway, that is not what we're talking about today. My grandson actually asked me today, he said, are you going to just talk about politics today? I said, I'm really not going to go into politics today, but, well, I'll tell you what, buddy, it is the shows that are somewhat political that do get the highest number of views, and with what we're talking about today, I expect the live feed to be pretty heavy today. Of course, as always, we'll get, you know, 20x, 30x on the audio download over the next 40 hours over – 40 to 60 hours over the video. It's just the way it works out. We're very much an audio-centric audience out there. But I do appreciate all of you that tune in for the live streams. And when we have live streams, if you want to actually interact with me in a way where I'll, like, answer some questions or comment on some things during the show, it's very important that you follow the format that we have laid out. And that is simply to put the word question or comment in all caps, and then your question or your comment. And if you do that, I'll be more likely with my one good eye to notice that you've done so, and I'll be more likely to actually get your question asked. Real quick, I'm going to mute my other computer here for you, and I will pull Rumble's feed up on the other screen, because if I don't do that, I can't see you. They're not that sophisticated at Rumble, I guess, and getting our chats into the background. Is anybody even over there? 44 people on Rumble. Holy crap. That is not a big number for our YouTube audience, but that is a big number for Rumble. Anyway, let's go ahead. Actually, it's 5. Okay, that makes more sense. 44 people hit play, but 5 are watching the live stream. So anyway, let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. We are going to talk about what I consider the true enemies of the people, the enemies of you and me, the people that really are the biggest problem. And I've got another thing out of sorts due to this, and I'm going to square that away for you right now, and we'll be able to keep rolling. But anyway, I actually thought of this show last week. I'm not surprised by anything anymore, that the type of people we're going to be talking about today, the type of groups when they do stuff, it's like, of course they did that. But every once in a while, it sticks in my craw. And so this goes back to my expert segment from Thursday last week, where I talked about the fact that the American Heart Association sent a lobbyist, like, dispatched emergency post-haste a lobbyist down to Texas at the Texas State House. And the reason they did it is because the Texas House was considering adding on some legislation for our SNAP program, which is basically kids' food stamps, right? The food stamps you get for your kids. And saying, hey, well, you know, if you're getting money to buy your kids' food, it probably shouldn't be Pepsi and Twinkies and candy and things like that. So, like, taking certain classes of food as full-on high-sugar junk food and saying this is not what these kids need. And you would think the American Heart Association, if they did what they say they do, would be just all over endorsing that. But no, that's not where their lobbyists went there. Their lobbyists went there to argue against it because it could hurt children's health. And that is so egregious that even though I expect it, it just hit me wrong. And I'm like, we haven't really dug into this in a while. So we're talking about today is 15 macro groups that are the enemies of you, your family, your way of life, your health, your sovereignty, both physically and mental sovereignty, your economic sovereignty, all of it. And these people really are your enemies. And I did crowdsource a lot of this. I used ChatGPT for some ideas as well. And I did get a lot of suggestions that were very drilled down, not macro. They were micro, like Anthony Fauci. Anthony Fauci is indeed an enemy of the people, but he would fall under federal bureaucracy, right? Including a lot of groups, like, let's say somebody like Lockheed Martin. Well, that would fall under, like, military-industrial complex. You see what I'm saying? Try to keep this really high level, because honest to God, we can, and maybe we even should just take some of these macro categories, single macro category, like, oh, I don't know, mainstream media or medical associations or the federal bureaucracy, and do a whole show just on like one level below the top level, like the individual groups. You know, if you did medical associations, the AMA, American Heart Association, or the American Medical Association, the American Heart Association, the American Diabetes Association, all of these groups are just horrible. And I know some of you are like, well, maybe I haven't, you haven't watched me much yet. You don't know much about this stuff yet. You're like, really? Doctors are bad? They certainly are as a group. They really are. Now, it doesn't mean that maybe 5% of them aren't really trying to help their patients, but about 90 to 95% of doctors are absolutely a horrible group of people in what they're actually doing. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't talk to you or hang out with you if you're a doctor. Or I wouldn't trust you with something like, oh, I don't know, directions on how to get somewhere. But I'm not going to trust you prescribing drugs for me, especially without some additional research. And by the time we're done today, you'll see why. Public sector unions would be another example. Those are your teachers' unions, right? These are unions that are funded by and large with public money. I mean, at least the private unions have to self-fund. These public sector unions is another example. K-12 and university education lumped in as one. So that's how I'm handling this today. When we get started, I'm going to start off with what makes somebody your enemy, like your like five primary characteristics. And then when we're done with this show today, you tell me who you think on my list isn't your enemy based on those criteria. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor day number one today is John Pugliano with the Wealth Steading Podcast, which you can find out more about at wealthsteading.com. John's a great guy. He is a servant leader in this community. He has helped many people in this community. I first started working with him in 2010. That's 15 years ago. He has never once promised me anything and not come through with it. He's just that kind of guy. Again, servant leadership and a really good investment manager. But there's something I want to let you know about on his website that maybe you guys didn't know. There is a page called Buy and Sell Alerts. And if you sign up on that page, you can get an email from John whenever he feels like sending it. It's not even weekly. It's probably two or three times a month. That talks about what he's actually doing with his money and his clients' money and certain things to be aware of. Plus, of course, you should subscribe to his podcast and listen to it. Usually it's somewhere between 8 and 15 minutes, and it comes out about once every 2 to 2.5 weeks. So it's not high frequency, but it is high value. Check him out today at wealthsteading.com. Next up, one of the oldest survival podcast sponsors there is, KnifeKits.com. We first signed KnifeKits.com as a sponsor in 2010, just like we brought John on board as an expert council member. That puts Knife Kits in the 15-year range of a sponsor, which is a long time to sponsor anything, but in the world of podcasting is a huge thing. Check him out today at KnifeKits.com, where you can make a knife, even if you've never done it before. And if you have done it before and you're a master bladesmith, you can find some of the coolest stuff you'll ever find. You can also find stuff for making cheese, whether out of leather or kydex. And also for making holsters and things like that as well. Check them out today. There's really nothing in their space that they do not offer, and they do a great job with that. I also do want to remind you guys real quick, because this is your last chance. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I will be attending a workshop and actually co-instructing a workshop about an hour north of me at a place called Crunchy Mama Farms in Alvord, Texas. There's an 18-person limit. I think they still have like 2 seats left available. I don't know if they've upped the website, but the last time I heard from them via email, they were down to 2 seats. So if you want to come, I would get in touch with them and get set up to be up there again Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And every student's going to leave not just with all the knowledge gained, but with about 50 pounds of the best grass-fed beef you'll ever put your hands on or in your mouth. So definitely consider doing that. Again, that's just kind of your final warning on that opportunity, and it is going to go away. And I think I've just about got all my discombobulation squared away. That'll show me to try to keep up and start on time, even when I know I'm going to be late. I should have gave it another minute. Anyway, let's get into it. Let's start off with, if we're going to talk about 15 groups, and these are going to be groups like big tech, mainstream media, big pharma, big food, doctors of the medical system, medical associations, the federal bureaucracy, and we'll go on from there. And we're going to say they're your enemies. Not they do a bad job. Not they do a bad job. They're your enemies. They are the enemy of you, your family, your mental sovereignty, your kids, your grandkids, your future generations, everything. They're your enemy. If we're, that's that, you know, I don't do shit like this for the purpose of clickbait. I do know when I do a topic like this, it will work, but that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, when I say don't do it as clickbait, I don't just willy-nilly throw out a word like enemies or an enemies list. That's a serious allegation, and I think it bears that we should examine what makes someone an enemy in this context. Number one would be they deceive you for their own gain. Now, maybe not every one of these will have all five of these, but I bet you they'll all have at least three, if not all five, if you really think about it. But if somebody deceives you, they give you information that they know is false information because they have an agenda and they don't care that you're given incorrect information, I would say that they are 100% your enemy. And look here, Christopher Ninjas says, 99% of doctors are horrible. Come on, Jack, you're making gross generalizations that are not accurate in my opinion. Well, Chris, I'll tell you that I didn't ask you for your opinion, first of all. And second of all, when I'm done today talking about doctors, I'd like to hear your opinion on why I'm wrong. But anyway, we'll just keep going. But are you deceived for their gain? Do they do things? Do they lie to you? Because it's better for them that you believe the wrong thing. That's criteria one. Two, they exploit you while they pretend to help you. While they pretend to help you. And by the way, Chris, I didn't say 99%. I said 95%. That's a number I'm very careful, comfortable with. And when we get to doctors today, we'll talk about that number. But that's the only thing about, do they do something that says, I'm going to exploit this person, somehow profit off this person, whether it's financially or by achieving my agenda, while I'm pretending to help them? We'll just keep these criteria in mind as we go through today. Number three, they benefit from your suffering or struggle. When you are not doing well, they are doing well. It actually makes things better for them when you have to struggle or suffer. And I don't mean the basic human struggle. Like, I think if we remove too much of things that people have to achieve over for them, they become complacent and lazy. When I say struggle here, I mean, you know, when you're giving a diabetic the advice to eat cranberry oatmeal cookies and you're the company that you represent profits from dialysis on end-stage kidney disease from diabetics, that to me would be you are benefiting from someone's struggle and suffering in an immense way. And it makes you a horrible, horrible, horrible human being who doesn't care about other people. You only care about your agenda. And then they create dependence to maintain power over you. Think about it this way. What if you knew a person and you could say three or four of the things that I'm saying to you is true about that person and they're in your life? You want them in your life, or would you consider them adversarial, an enemy? They create dependence to maintain power over you. And we'll come back and invoke these as we go through these individual groups. And number five, they hold you to rules that they themselves do not follow. They hold you. Boy, I bet you somebody just, you know, their head just exploded over the last 5 years thinking about that one. You know, when you have politicians at a restaurant while you're locked down, that would be an example of rules for thee, but not for me. But there's a lot of that. And again, we'll hit on it today. And I'm interested in hearing from you guys as we go through today. When you recognize one of those five criteria in one of these groups, even if I don't bring it up, bring that up in the chat. Just say, like, recognize or something like that, like enemy characteristic or something. And you put that in the chat for me, and I'll try to keep up with at least some of it. So, again, they deceive you for their own gain. They exploit you while they pretend to help you. They benefit from your suffering and or struggles. They create dependence to maintain power over you, welfare, and then they hold you to rules that they don't hold themselves to. I would say that if you can identify a couple of those characteristics in any group or entity or, you know, somebody's supposed to be your friend or family, you've got an enemy. You've got somebody that you should not trust. Hopefully we agree on that. So here's my top 15 true enemies of the people. Number one is big tech. I probably don't have to say much about that, but big tech, do they deceive you for their own gain? Do they exploit you while pretending to help you? Do they have rules for you that they don't follow themselves? I'd say all of those fit for that one, so that's straight up. But if we think about big tech, the biggest thing we can say about big tech is they censor truth. They don't care if something's true or false, right? They care that it doesn't match their agenda. COVID was a perfect time to see this, right? Like, I think the best thing about COVID as a period of time is how many things people were like willing to give a pass to or say they don't really mean it that way or it's just an error. Like, it was so in your face that somebody would come out and say something like, well, it appears that hydroxychloroquine helps mitigate COVID symptoms. And they would immediately be banned and have their shit taken down, have their videos demonetized, thrown in YouTube prison. I went to YouTube prison like 8 times during the whole cult COVID bullshit. And no one from YouTube ever said, you're wrong when you said this because that. And you know what? If they did, at least we could have a discussion about it. But instead, they silence the voice that they oppose. And they don't care about misinformation because I can show you right now 1,000 videos on YouTube explaining to you why the earth is flat. So it's not misinformation. It's when your information conflicts with their information, the better the case you make, the more likely they are to censor you. There's an old saying. When you cut out a man's tongue, right, you only prove that you are afraid of what they might say. And that's big tech as a whole. They also track your data. And they sell your data. They flat out can know all kinds of information about you that you'd like to keep private. And sure, you ticked a box somewhere that you said you accepted like 87 pages of bullshit terms. You can't use it without it. But they will sell that data to anybody. They will hand it right over to the government without even being asked for it sometimes. There's a whole program called the PRISM program where big tech worked directly with government. During COVID, big tech had a pipeline directly to the government. And we had people with no medical knowledge in government and in big tech working together to silence people. So big tech to me is definitely, and they manipulate your behavior. Someone who manipulates you is your enemy. Plain and simple. Big tech will flat out show you things that they know enrages you just for engagement. You are not being served well by having things that enrage you, often that aren't even true or are highly misleading, purposely fed to you by a computer-generated algorithm. So to me, big tech goes on 100% on the enemies list, and I put them as number one today because they are so in your face with it. And this includes people like some of you guys have a big superhero now in Elon Musk, and there's a lot of things I like about Elon Musk, but let me tell you something right now. If you think X is a free speech platform, then you are retarded. I'm sorry. Like, there is no way that X is a free speech platform. And it's not because if you don't do some level of control, it'll be what Elon calls a hellscape. It's because there are certain things they don't want said, and they will just silence you for it. Or what they'll do is they'll do what they've done to me for years, and it's still, you know, lifted for a while, and then came back. They'll shadow ban you. That's true on YouTube. The fact that my YouTube channel is like 65,000 people subscribe is ridiculous. And I've had people tell me over and over and over again, I have subscribed to you. I've turned on the alerts. I don't get any alerts. I come back and it says I'm not subscribed to you. So I resubscribe to you. And then a week later, I stop getting the alerts and I come back and I'm unsubscribed. This has happened over and over and over and over and over again. So what they're doing when they do this to me, they're interfering with my ability to make an income. They're fucking with my business by turning off my ability to reach people who have said, I want to hear him. And at the same time, they're denying you the right to hear what you want to hear. Enemies list, period. Next up, and it goes in consort. And I tried to put these in a logical flow where they kind of, where they the teeth most mesh together and they work in cahoots. And that is mainstream media. And when I say mainstream media, today I pretty much mean all media that isn't 100% independent that you wouldn't call social media. Right? That's it. And then a lot of, like I said, there's a meshing of this. An awful lot of what MSNBC or CNN or Fox News or whatever does they can put that out on Big Tech, and Big Tech will totally let them run with their shit, right? So that's where it starts to blend right away, even though we're only two in. But number one is mainstream media manufactures consent and agreement. If you think back, again, COVID I'll use a lot today because this happened so blatantly during COVID. Mainstream media scared the vast majority of this country into consent and compliance. And this is just one example of how they did that. The real-time death counters. Do you remember those? There was no connection between those things and reality, and no one has ever shown me any proof that there was. The real-time death counters were nothing but a widget made by a tech person that they put on the screen. There was no way to know who was dying where and when around the world, but yet they had this like rapidly accelerating, we're all going to die. There's not one of those fuckers. I'm going to tell you straight up, not one of those fuckers that was like, oh, and as we look at the real-time death counter, let's talk to Dr. Jagoff to see what we can do besides sneeze in our sleeve to protect us from COVID. The guy saying it knew when he was pointing at that widget that he was lying to you. He knew he was lying because there is no world in which that number made any sense. When I started tracking the actual reported data, I was finding deaths reported 6, 8, 10 weeks after the person died, not classified as a COVID death, 2.5 months later, changed and classified as a COVID death. So how could you possibly, in the early days when nobody knew shit, have a real-time death counter running? If you don't think that is manufacturing consent, they also control the narrative. Did you ever see? They occasionally would bring like Harvey Weish on to talk about hydroxychloroquine. Some of the people had talked about ivermectin, and they'd give a little five minute segment by themselves. Then they'd have somebody come on and rant how they're a lunatic, and then they would just go on with it. And then they pretended that they actually gave both sides of the story. If the media actually wanted you to have the truth, they would have gotten somebody like Dr. Harvey Weish, which is one of the most cited researchers that's alive today, right? Like when you start looking at people that are cited in medical journals more than Harvey Weish, you're looking at people that have been dead for 20, 30 years or more and famous names. You know, with medicine, it's really psychology, but like Sigmund Freud has been cited more than Harvey Weish. That's the kind of level you have to go to get somebody cited more. You would have gotten him. And you would have gotten any one of these morons telling you it was going to kill you and it was for fish aquariums or it was, you know, like the ivermectin was horse paste or something. They would have put them on TV. They would have let them each say their piece and have an open, honest debate. But they didn't do that because that does not control the narrative. And they silenced dissent. And the mainstream media silences dissent two ways. Number one, the person that dissents, they either just do not give them the ability to speak, or when they speak, they talk over them, and they stack the deck. They take, this is why he's a loon. Let's listen to the loon, and here's why he's a loon again. That's how they control the narrative that way. And they lied to you. They told you things like, you know, Joe Rogan, they made him look sicker than he was. That's an example. Another way they control the narrative. Remember when Biden did his, like, freaking Nazi speech? We had the Marines behind him and the red and everything. And in the middle of the speech, the red shade lightened because even CNN and MSNBC was like, oh, this doesn't look good. Let's just change it, right? So many examples we could go on, but let's go on from mainstream media. I think most people would agree mainstream media is an enemy of the people. How about big food? Big food. When I say big food, I'm talking about the fact that you go in the grocery store right now and you walk down the chip aisle or the bread aisle or the packaged food aisle, and you're like, oh, my God, look at the free market. This is just amazing, isn't it? If you're a dummy, like, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of choices. And the truth is, in any aisle in the grocery store, there is between 4 and 7 main brands that make up over 95% of the product on the shelf. 4 and 7 main brands in any full on both sides of the aisle, front or the back of the store, there'll be 4 to 7 main brands. That's all the choice in the world that you have. And they are, you know, Frito-Lay, PepsiCo, right, Coca-Cola, all these other giant corporations. And a lot of times you think of like PepsiCo. Go start looking what these fuckers make. They don't just make soda and soft drinks. They have their tentacles through everything, and they have complete dominating control over the supermarket space. If you are a small independent company, it is very hard to get your ass one little narrow spot on the shelf. There's people, their entire job is to make sure that you don't. It's called merchandising, right? Merchandising, retail merchandise. That means we want to make sure that we have at least our piece of this shelf. And if anybody's on a shelf next to us, it should be another big conglomerate. We don't want small guys. They'll give the small guys a little, about 5% of the space. It's always controlled who they let in. And they're always evaluating, do we want to consume this company into one of our own? And so you get really good independent brands being in the low-carb space. Like one of those brands was Rao's. They make a tomato sauce, like a spaghetti, a marinara sauce. And Rao's made a very low carbohydrate sauce. That's why they took off in the space of low carb. So everybody started buying it because it was the one really. And then a giant food conglomerate bought them, rolled them in, and now they have all kinds of junk food in addition to the jarred sauce. And the jarred sauce is not quite what it was in the beginning, and I'm sure that will only continue to get worse over time as they bleed out the brand. And so you see all these brands, but they're really all owned by one giant tent. I remember when people were like, hey, I'm gonna boycott Bud Light, but you know, InBev makes like 80% of the freaking beer sold in the United States. And they don't care where they get their money from. They don't care what label's on it. They care that they get their money. And these are the people that have tied directly into things like the American Heart Association. Why do you think the American Heart Association is down in Texas? And we'll get to them in a little bit. But down in Texas, saying it's very important that children through SNAP, which is public money, have access to buy soda. Because one of the biggest contributors to the American Heart Association is PepsiCo. You see how all this works? You see how this is all strung together? So when we get into big food, we get companies that literally at this point are profiting from disease, addiction, and fake nutrition. Disease, fake nutrition, and addiction. And these fucking companies literally have figured out something known as the bliss point. And the bliss point is where we get the salt, the fat, and the sugar at the exact right combination for the food the flavor's going on, if we can even call it food, that when Lay says something like you can't eat just one, it's not because they make a really great potato chip. It's because the chemical engineering in that chip makes that statement not a brag, it makes it a fact. It keys in on a part of the primal brain. Because the type of food that's now available in mass and super cheap today, and I don't even mean about the toxic nature, the chemicals and everything, just the breakdown of the macros doesn't exist in nature. You cannot go out into nature and find something with the amount of fat and sugar at the same time that's in a barbecue potato chip. It doesn't exist. And so, because we run as human batteries, that's one thing the Matrix got right. Our bodies are batteries, but batteries for ourselves is what they're supposed to be. And we lived at a time when you didn't just go to the grocery store whenever you wanted more shit. You didn't just run down to the corner store and pick up some Slurpees and shit. You had to go out and find food. And as you went through seasonality, different foods ebbed and flowed in supply. And inevitably, you would go through a period of time with a fair shortage of food, where all of your tribal band members would lose weight, and then spring would spring, and then there would be new food, and then you would start to put weight back on, and you would go through this kind of up and down in weight. And so when you got into a place, let's say, where the salmon were running and the berries were out at the same time, you actually had a significant amount of fat, protein, and sugar together, you put that together, and you ate that, it sent this signal, this survival signal to your body. Charge up. Charge your batteries, because eventually you're going to hit another low point and you're going to need to be able to draw the fat for energy, and you're going to need to draw the fat for the vitamin D for your immune system that's in it. Well, that doesn't exist anymore. You can have all the fat, sugar, and crap you want all at the same time, all the time. Now, these companies know this. If you go watch a show, and it's a great show, honestly, called The Food That Built America, you'll learn, especially in the first season, about how much of this was done by chemists. And I actually don't believe when they started out, they were really trying to do it this way. It's just how they started out. that show will take you back to a time when not everybody had a refrigerator. In fact, most people didn't. Food spoiled. Food went bad. The initial thing they were doing from a scientific standpoint was making the food not kill you quickly through poisoning. And the long-term result was they've made food that slowly kills you over time with all of these chemicals and all these processes. And they don't care. That's why they're your enemy. They deceive you for their own gain. They exploit you while they pretend to help. They benefit when you struggle. They create dependence to maintain power over you. See how all that works. All right, so we also have pure fake nutrition. If you look at a lot of the products on the shelves in the store today, and then you really break down like how much nutrition is in here, there isn't any. And if there is any, it's because they basically take powdered multivitamin and throw a little bit of it in there, enriched niacin and stuff like that. Moving on, though, Big Pharma. Big Pharma does not sell cures. They sell treatments. And I know that might be hard for you to believe because it seems like so much good has come from the pharmaceutical industry. But has it? Has it really? Pfizer's been in business for over 100 years, for more than a century. We have had Pfizer as a company. They're probably the biggest and best drug manufacturer known in the world, right? Pfizer. How many drugs has Pfizer invented in a century that cure something? How many? You think maybe one or two or five, half a dozen? Zero. You will not find a drug that was invented and brought to market by Pfizer that cures a single illness. And it's hard to believe, but you won't. You won't. There is nothing they created that cures disease. Zero. So I'm thinking once you give somebody a century and they're one of the biggest, most powerful companies in their space and in the world as a whole, and they haven't invented a single cure, then maybe they're not trying. So if you have drug manufacturers that are specifically not attempting to cure disease, are they your friend or your enemy? What do they profit from? Have you ever noticed this? When you watch commercials, right? When you watch commercials for drug companies, what do they advertise? What do they, do you ever see a commercial for antibiotics? Have you ever seen a commercial for an antibiotic? Do you ever see a commercial for anything that really is an acute treating substance? In other words, you get sick, you take this thing, you get better, and you go on with your life. The only commercials like that will be like your run-of-the-mill over-the-counter shit, like Robitussin or something, or NyQuil or whatever, that they know you don't even need a doctor. You just go to the store and buy it. So they advertise that the same way they do a bag of chips. But all the pharmaceuticals, all the stuff that requires a prescription, that you watch TV for, they're all drugs that are designed for you once you start taking them to never take anything but them for the rest of your life. I would put these guys on the enemy list. How about doctors in the medical system? Remember, Chris was very angry at me at the beginning, one of our few listeners from Facebook, because I said 95%. And of course, it wasn't good enough for him. He had to change it to 98% or 99% are bad people. And again, I don't think that they're bad people in probably anything they do except being a doctor. And I don't think they think they're bad people. And I don't think they intend to harm, but they're doing it. And I think they have a responsibility to not do it. I think that's like one of their key tenets of their oath, right? To first do no harm. So here's the flat reality. Almost every doctor that sees patients is seeing patients on health insurance. And the way the billing works, that doctor is literally paid more money when that patient's on more drugs. They're in a system of perverse incentives. That doesn't mean they should do it, but they do. And I'm going to tell you that doctors prescribe drugs without even thinking about it anymore. Here's an example. My sister-in-law, a little bit overweight, not a lot. Most people looking at her wouldn't even have said she was overweight, but she was a little overweight. She had a little bit of a high A1C, not even high enough to be considered a type 2 diabetic. Dr. Caesar, with no explanation of why, just says this would be a really good thing for you to be on. And I'll tell you why. Because she has teacher's insurance, because she's a teacher. So she has really good health insurance. So they would cover the full cost of Ozempic. So he immediately wrote her a prescription for Ozempic. She did two doses of it. It made her so sick, she quit taking it over a year ago. And she has stomach paralysis still to this day. Okay, no, that doctor's not a good person. He is an enemy of the people. He made a prescription with no deeper discussion. And you say, well, the patient is responsible for it. No, because the education system that I'm going to get to soon and the media that we've already covered have programmed people to shut the fuck up and trust the science. And that means trust the doctors, right? I trust doctors and science. Science isn't supposed to be trusted. It isn't. It's supposed to be questioned all the time. That's what science is. It's a rigorous error detecting process, not a system of authority. This doctor put her on a drug and now claims it has nothing to do with what happened. So I never had this problem, ever. You can't tell me your other explanation as to what caused the problem. It's not like they're like, well, here's what really happened. He's just like, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. If she, the only good of this is she's lost a lot of weight, even though she went off the Ozempic, because she basically has to live a ketogenic diet now. If she eats anything with any significant amount of carbs, she's sick for days. And this is not a woman who's sick in her head or something like that. I'm sorry, doctors in the medical system, they treat symptoms and they ignore root causes on a daily basis. And they make such lazy excuses. Well, the reason we just give drugs is because if you talk to the patient about diet and exercise, they won't do it. That is the most pathetic pile of bullshit, self-serving crap I've ever heard. And I do mean this. The majority of doctors are the enemy of their own patients. They're doing harm. They know they're doing harm. And where they don't know they're doing harm, I'm sorry, doctors, you have a fucking responsibility to do the fucking research and stop listening to the chick that brings your nurse's donuts, that has big tits and sends you to Hawaii twice a year. If you did that, you wouldn't be doing this shit, because most of you, at your core, you're not a bad person, but you're acting as a bad person. You are a drug-pushing salesman for pharma. That brings me to my next one, medical associations. As hard as I just let doctors have it, let me add to that. As bad as it is, if the medical associations were actually run by real doctors who actually treated patients, which is how they are marketed, we'd be in better shape. We would. Still be bad, as you can see, but we'd be better off. These are basically unions. They're trade unions. And their job is to grow the market in their market segment. So the American Heart Association's core objective, for instance, is not to make sure, even though they say it is, that Americans are more heart healthy. That's marketing, right? But their objective is to make sure that cardiologists and drug manufacturers for cardio-based drugs, etc., make lots of money. That's their job. The American Diabetes Association profits from diabetes, and it's a growth industry thanks to big food and the doctors being complicit. Like, this is why the American Diabetes Association has a completely unholy, evil alliance with a company called DaVita. I don't understand why people aren't more outraged about the DaVita and American Diabetes Association connection. If you haven't heard this before, DaVita is a company that makes nothing but dialysis equipment and has outpatient dialysis clinics all over between where I live and my son works, which is about a 15-minute drive. There's two DaVita clinics, two. The only way this company makes money, there is nothing else they do, is dialysis. Okay. The number one cause of end-stage kidney disease in America today is type 2 diabetes. DaVita partners with the ADA to make recommendations for diet down to providing recipe books. And you can look this shit up. Some of their recipes are things like cranberry oatmeal cookies, popcorn three ways, including covered with sugar. Even a lot of the meals that they recommend that could be good for diabetics have added sugar for no apparent reason. One example is they have if you go to DaVita's website and you look up these combined recipes between them and the ADA, it's salmon with vegetables. Sounds great. 3 tablespoons of honey on a single salmon fillet. Let me say that again. 3 tablespoons, but it's honey, Jack. It's fucking sugar. Okay, I don't know why there's not more outrage over that one alliance alone. There should be people in prison for the rest of their life over this. This is straight up gangster level shit. Hey, we profit from diabetes. Hey, we do too. Did we just become best friends? I think we did. You want to go do karate in the garage? I mean, it's that fucking sick. And you can keep going through all of these organizations, the American Heart Association, the AMA, the American Diabetes Association, all of these people, they are all in it for the purpose of making more money. And what would happen to the American Diabetes Association as an entity if we flat out did what we can do, which is cure 98% of cases of type 2 diabetic? What would happen to them? They'd be out of business. They would be out of business. As you know them today, they might still exist for type 1 and they might actually be helpful then. Nobody wants the thing they profit from to go away unless they're truly a servant. These people are not servants. They're parasites. Next on, how about the federal bureaucracy? A little bit of a turn there. This is what we're seeing from DOGE, right? I think most people would have agreed that the federal bureaucracy was a problem before DOGE. And I think a lot of people have been tricked into believe DOGE is actually doing something to stop the federal bureaucracy. They really aren't. Because they've pointed out this shit. Trump tried to cut it with executive orders, turned around, pushed a CR through that's going to pay for it to happen for another 6 months. Yay us. But there is one good thing, right? People are seeing it. Why do you think we have NGOs, which, I mean, how do you call somebody an NGO when they're completely funded with government money? That'd make it, an NGO is a non-governmental organization. Well, that means they shouldn't be paid with government money, but they are. And sometimes 100% of their money is government money while they call themselves an NGO. Why do you think we have an NGO, for instance, helping people get sex changes in India? No matter what you think about that, billions of dollars to help people in India get a sex change. Why would you do that? Because it doesn't matter what the money's supposed to be for. This is regime change is what it is. This is controlling. Because what do they say when they really fall back on it to why we can't cut all this? It will be an open door for our adversaries like China. In other words, we don't want to stop manipulating and controlling other countries because then our adversary will go in and do it, which is actually admitting what's going on. And the federal bureaucracy is just, that's just a piece of it. It's actually, to be honest with you, the USAID stuff is the tiniest piece of all the federal bureaucracy. When the Democrats are shrieking right now, they're coming after your Social Security. How? By pointing out that a person 150 years old shouldn't still be drawing Social Security because they're dead? Like, it doesn't make any, why do you think that's going on? There's a bunch of grift in this. There's massive billions, if not trillions of dollars over any period of years being raked out of this, robbing the country blind, robbing the taxpayer blind. This is clearly somebody who's not your friend. They're unaccountable and they have power that rules by regulation. The federal bureaucracy has no real constitutional power. If you actually followed the Constitution, 90% of what it does, it's not even supposed to be doing. That's why it's all convoluted. That's why it's all confusing. And if you think about a lot of other things like Big Tech had this pipeline, right? It had a pipeline with the government, but Big Tech was getting money through the federal bureaucracy. If you look at the softball interviews that Kamala Harris was given, everything was pre-approved. Things were edited before they were actually published. And then the softball treatment of Joe Biden, who everybody knew had dementia, by the way, right? Everybody knew it, but they hid it. A lot of these media outlets, these people were given money, or the networks were given money through the federal bureaucracy to protect these people. This is just, I know this is hard to believe for some of you. This is all truth. I defy anybody to conclusively prove that anything I'm saying here isn't true. And so the federal bureaucracy, tons of shit that you guys are rightfully pissed off about goes under there. What NIH did during COVID, that would be under the federal bureaucracy. Coming up with these rules that nobody in Congress has actually voted on, Like, we're going to, like, ban certain kinds of gas stoves and shit like that. That's federal bureaucracy. They shouldn't be, the way that they choose to enforce things like water rights, that's federal bureaucracy. There's very clear-cut rules as far as laws. But then what they do is they say, but what it really means is, how hard did they fight the Supreme Court decision that took away this ability to unilaterally enforce rules without actually having to defend themselves in court? It made it almost impossible for people to sue. The obligation became for the person who was being injured by the bureaucrat to prove the wrong rather than the bureaucrat to prove they had the ability to do the enforcement or needed to in the first place. And we could keep going. Like, we could do a whole show on just the federal bureaucracy and not run and go 2 hours and still have more to say. So we'll move on. How about public sector unions? I will tell you, and this will trigger people just like my doctor comment did. There is probably not a union more worthy of your hatred and despising them than the two big education unions, Randy Weingarten, and she's the head of one, and there's another educational union. These people are scum. These people are the ones that shrieked, do not send children back to school during COVID. Can't do it. It's too dangerous. Everybody knew that kids were barely affected by it at all. And then they hid behind, oh, our teachers will get sick and they'll die. When most of these teachers, by the time they were still saying this, everybody had already had it. Anybody had already had it by then. They were still saying this shit. They're still to this day trying to go back to that. They like that. What they're trying to advocate for is more power, but less education. I haven't seen the teachers' unions propose anything to actually better educate children in my adult life, and I'm 53 years old. You know, so you're going to have to show me a place where it happened for me to believe you. And then there's a lot of like these government unions and things like that. Here's another example. So for all this, oh my God, the poor bureaucrats, oh my God, oh no. They're just, Elon is just cruel in the way that he's laying them off, and the IRS agents are crying. Like, is there anything more delicious than the tears of an IRS agent? No, there isn't. I'm going to make a mead, a commercial mead, small batch, IRS tears or something, golden tears of the IRS or something. I don't know, right? Like, they are just losing their mind over all this. But who got in the way of it? Like Trump's initial idea, let's just lay off, get rid of, we'll stop hiring, and that will help through atrophy. And then we'll offer an incentive. You can have anybody that wants to, it's a federal employee, you stick your hand up, we'll give you 8 months of pay, and you go away. And you have 8 months to figure out what to do. Do you guys remember that? Do you know what happened to it? They were sued that they can't do it, and federal judge agreed. And I don't know what the status of it is now. I know it was still being fought for a while. But who did it? Unions. Government union. The government union said we're supporting our people, which is what they're supposed to do, by making sure there was like 60,000 people said immediately, I'm out. I'm out. Who got in the way? The union that's supposed to be supporting the worker got in the way of the worker willingly choosing, I'm going to retire early, take my money, and go do something else. While they full well know a lot of these employees are not doing their jobs at all. They don't care if they do their job. They care that they're there. The fact that they're there gives them power. When they can say, we represent 2 million employees, that has a lot more pull than we represent 800,000 employees. They didn't want that number to go down. Number go down bad for them. That's the truth. I'm sorry if you don't believe it, but it is. But on top of all this, it's 100% funded with tax dollars. Oh, Jack, that's not true. Just like every other union members of like the postal workers or the office and employee, a professional OPEC union or OPIC, whatever it is, like they all pay union dues. Yes, and who pays them with what money? Who pays them with what money? How is a federal employee paid for? With federal taxes. When they say they pay taxes too, That's like a dude in the back of a pickup truck pushing against the cab while everybody else is on the ground pushing the truck, and he says, I'm helping. They, honest to God, I don't even think they should – a federal employee should not even pay taxes. They should just pay them, right, so that it's already adjusted out. Just why make the money go in a circle? We'll get to that. That's banks. Money moves. They make money no matter where it moves or how or why. All it's got to do is move. But you think about it. Here's what I mean. Let's say that a federal employee is making $120,000 a year, and after taxes, they're making $90,000. I'm not saying give them $120,000, let them keep all their money. I'm saying just pay them the $90,000. Why even create the need for this revolving system of shell game bullshit? Because it's part of the whole illusionary process. But I'm telling you guys, the public sector unions, they also shield incompetence and extract wealth with no accountability. You want to, you know, for all this talk, we need to pay teachers better. We need to pay teachers better. Randy Weingarten makes a $500,000+ base salary to be a teacher's union employee. We don't even need her. She's functionally useless. But she makes $500,000 a year. The average teacher is nowhere near that. Shouldn't teach anything. I get, you're right, you have to know shit to teach shit. I guess you could teach a class on grifting. How about the surveillance state? The surveillance state. Things like the PRISM program, which has way evolved since we first learned about that back in, what, 2010? Remember when I first started covering that back in 2010? They monitor, control, and erode your personal freedom. That's the surveillance state. Do you know that every single person in our country, there's a digital dossier on you? I covered that back in about 2012. Had an expert on to talk about that program. Our nation was founded on a principle of a right to privacy. And so what they do is they create this illusion. They put out, like, this is where it all folds back together. The media puts out shows like 24 and Jack Bauer's going to get him. And everybody cheers for Jack while he's physically torturing the obvious bad guy. But why do you think they're doing that? Do you think that those types of TV shows bear any resemblance to the actual reality of, like, black sites and things like that? If you do, the propaganda is working. The surveillance state's entire purpose is not just to spy on you, but to make you think before you speak, to make you think before you act, to make you feel like, well, I better not, I'll get in trouble. That's what its purpose is, and that's what its biggest purpose is. It is to limit freedom by creating the illusion that your choice to limit your own freedom is voluntary. Now, I'll personally tell you what I think we should be doing. I think everybody out there should be using encryption technology all the time. And I'm not talking about Bitcoin, though you should use that too. What I mean is, like, you should start sending encrypted emails to people with, you know, that have the counter response on the other side where they're able to get your emails just so your emails are encrypted. And I don't care if your email's about, you know, your sick cat. We should make them work harder for what they get. We should burn up their systems by overloading. If you want to spend 6 months, NSA, to figure out that I sent my friend an email about how to make, you know, kebabs, go ahead and do it. I'll start sending cat pictures to everybody I know with them, you know, if I can get everybody on the other end actually using encryption on the other end. Absolutely. But it really is about control through making you afraid. And at the same time, convincing you that it's necessary for you to be protected from some spooky bad guy somewhere. These people are not helping you. They really aren't. How about education? Like, I'm going to piss everybody off today. People that love doctors, you're getting pissed off. Teachers, you're next, right? When I say education, I mean K-12 and university. All of it. The whole education system is rotten to the fucking core. I'm sorry, it is. They indoctrinate, create obedience, and suppress critical thinking. Students are not rewarded when they question a teacher, are they? Especially if they do it well and intelligently. I actually remember this being different. I remember having discussions in high school especially where they would say something. I'm like, I don't quite agree. And they might not even eventually agree with me, but it was like I was respected by my teachers because I could defend my idea. You know, when they would say certain things about, you know, economics is something that even when I was a 15-year-old, I was pretty sharp on. I'd say, that doesn't make sense to me. That seems more like an inflation response than a supply and demand response. I can remember one of those. I think I was a junior, so I'd have been 16 years old, having that discussion with an economics teacher. And he was like, I don't agree with you, and here's why. And he was actually a little bit harsh. But what I remember was, is I was able to defend my position. I had a certain level of respect come from that. I don't see that anymore. I don't see any evidence of that at all. And that's only going back to the 80s. And that's gone. That's dead. The one you can really see what K-12 education is about is the lie, right? I also think it's not on my list, but when somebody specifically knows they're lying to you and they keep doing it, I would say that makes them your enemy. So here's the big lie. Parents, we need you to support education. We need you to work with us and help us better educate your child. Now, what does that sound like? Well, we want you to do their homework with us. We want you to read their assignments and know what they're doing. And we want you to ask us if you don't understand and blah, 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 blah. No, they don't want any of that shit. What parents mean when they say they need what teachers mean when they say they want parents' support, what do they actually mean? We want you to be the rule enforcer and you leave the teaching to us. They don't want anything they say questioned in any way whatsoever. And it's kind of like the doctors. I don't think that teachers in and of themselves are bad people, but they are behaving like bad people because they are behaving in the way that they were trained and taught themselves. So if you think about a teacher today that's, let's say, 40 years old, younger than me by about a decade, a little more than a decade. I don't like saying it, but it's true. And that teacher came up in a time that was already different than the way that I did. And they were taught with that same mindset. You don't question it. The right answer is in the back of the book. And that is the right answer. And you put down the right answer even if you don't think it's right. And they, the people that go through all that, get to college and say, hey, I know what I want to do. I want to go do what was just done to me by somebody else. And they get a degree in education or something related to it. And then they get a teaching certificate and go back and teach. Think about what that person is. First of all, they clearly didn't see through the bullshit, or they wouldn't have wanted to propagate more of the bullshit. The people that become teachers are rule followers to the extreme 90% of the time, at least. Okay. Then most of them, and I'm not all of them, but most of them never have held a job outside of an institution. They've never been outside of an institution. They go to an institution from K to 12. They go straight from 12th grade graduation, summer's over, right back to school. 4 years later, 5 years later, depending on how long it takes them, they graduate, and the first job they get is what? Exactly what you'd expect as a teacher. Now, let's say they've taught for 15 years. Okay, so they went 12, K to 12, that's 13 years in school, right? Four more years, right? Was it 17 years in school? And then they teach for, let's say, another 10 years. Okay, so that person's now been in that institution for 27 years. They're completely programmed to do things the way that that system is designed to have them done. There is no independent thought in there at all. Most teachers, they could not function outside of an institution. They just couldn't. They think things are unfair. They are just anybody that doesn't work in an institutional environment finds to be comical that somebody would do this. Like, here's an example. And, you know, this is even members of my family. I have teachers that are in my family. I don't think it's fair that I have to go back to work a week before the kids show up to get my classroom ready and do all of this random crap. I don't think it's fair that I have to, every couple of years, take some of these continuing education classes. Now, let's talk about both of those. Number one, you're only talking about people that work less than 180 days a year. They literally only work half the year. No, summer's only 3 months long. Yeah, but just like you get weekends and stuff off, they do too. And occasionally there's a teacher in service day, which I'm sure they don't work that hard at, whatever, but they are there, where the kids are off, but they're not. But in reality, it's like they get every federal holiday. right? If there's a holiday, teachers get it. If there's a holiday, kids get, they get it too, right? So they get all that time off, plus they don't work weekends. Plus they get off 3 months a year in summer. And then for that person to tell somebody that's maybe, you know, a normal week for them is 55 hours and they work year round, that it's unfair. That person just thinks you're a child, and you are. I'm sorry, you are behaving like a fucking child. Or we have to spend some of our own money for some of our stuff for our classroom. First of all, no, you don't. All this bullshit, all these like Pinterest fucking classrooms and shit. We didn't have that when I was a kid, and I dare say we had a better education. Like decorating a classroom, that was something you had the kids do. Everybody make a picture of what they did last summer. You put them up on the wall, and then, you know, Halloween came, and you made Halloween pictures and put them on the wall, and kids got to learn from their art assignments and take ownership of their classroom or whatever. And if the teacher did put some shit up on the wall, that shit might be there for 10 years. No, now we need new shit. No, that's all bullshit, first of all. Second of all, don't be a teacher and cry about having to spend your own money for your own fucking job and talk to somebody like, oh, I don't know, a mechanic. Go tell a mechanic about how much money you have to spend. You have to spend $500 a year of my own money. It's not fair. And the mechanic's like, shut the fuck up. I got $20,000 in tools. And if I don't have those tools, I can't get a job. Well, the mechanic's paid better. Yet, go get a teacher to change your fucking oil, and I'll tell you why. That's why. Because they can't. So most teachers that are supposed to be teaching your children to be in the real world, they've never been in the real world. And the same thing's true about the majority of college professors. You know, they just go to school a little longer, something like that. And what do they do next? Right? They go to school a little longer, and then they get a job in college, and then they teach there. They too have never been anywhere in the real world, most of them. Now, there's some schools that are some exceptions. You know, like SMU has an amazing master's level business program, and like all their professors have actually been successful in the world of business, most in the private sector, before they become professors. That's the exception, though. It's not the rule. The K-12 and university system is your enemy. I'm sorry. They are. That's why we have so many children who become adults who can't do anything, and they believe all the bullshit that they're told by big tech and big media and big food and big pharma. They've been trained to comply. That's the actual job of a teacher, by the way, is to, especially K-12, to train compliance. They call it socialization. That means to train you like a dog to obey. Why do you think we have bells in schools and shit like that, right? 4 minutes to get to your next class. Bing. If you don't get there, you get a demerit. You're in trouble. And if you look at the school system, doesn't it look like the prison industrial complex too, by the way? How about local governments and their overreach? I find that most of the really bad things being done today that tell a person what they can or cannot do with their own property has nothing to do with the federal government directly. Nothing. So, and the way I could point that out is I live in an unincorporated part of Texas, and there is very little I can't do on my property. If I want to put a pond in, I can put a pond in. So clearly it's not a federal regulation, unless I was like, sometimes people will buy land that's like they can own it, but yet it's like a federal park or something that they have some piece of it that can be owned privately. Like when the federal land was taken, there were some private owners that were part of it, and they said you could stay there under these. Okay, I don't like it, but I get if you buy that piece of land, you should know the restrictions you're under. But what I'm saying is if it's actual private land, there's nothing that says I can't put a pond here. Rock says I can't put a pond here, but the government doesn't care. And how many things I can do here? Now, if you go just a few miles away from me, there's a town over there called Lakeside. And Lakeside is a local government that might as well be a fucking HOA for all that it is. It's just that level. Like, if somebody parks their car the wrong way, they literally call the cops, and the cops come and write this person a ticket. Here's an example. One of my friends from the area, he has two beautiful Corvettes. He decided he didn't need two beautiful Corvettes. He wanted to sell one. So he parked it in the grass so that it could be seen from the main road that goes through town. Somebody called the police on him because it's illegal to park your car on your grass in that place. Okay, that's not the federal government. That's local governments. People talk about how hard it is for people to be able to afford a house. But let's talk about why is it so hard to afford a house? One, most of the building regulations are either state or local, and a ton of it's local down to the county or even the city, and it's boilerplate regulations. In other words, the people behind the Agenda 2030 realize that it's very difficult to get this all done from the federal all the way down in the United States. We're a very big country. We are still a republic. There's a lot of autonomy within this country, but they also realize that like local politicians are easy to buy and just buy like 5% of them every year. And in 20 years, you got the whole thing done. And that's what they're doing. So they create this boilerplate reg and they go into these counties or these city governments and say, hey, you need to protect yourself from all this stuff here. And they just hand it to them and they go, here's a bunch of money. And by the way, we'll do these other things if you'll do it. And then they do. And next thing you know, people can't, you know, have water rights anymore. Or they try to build a building and they say, you can't do it. Then the local governments turn around and say, hey, we still don't have enough money. So now you make the cost of production of housing more expensive. But then when you buy a house, anybody that's ever bought a house knows you don't just have to pay for the house. You have house, you have insurance on the house, and you have taxes on the property. And there are so many places right now, property taxes are through the roof, and all new builds are very expensive from a tax standpoint because the new builds have to be big houses. Well, how'd that happen? Well, you know, all these city governments and county governments are like, wait a minute. If somebody puts in like a 950 square foot two-bedroom house, then it's only going to, say, be worth $140,000. Well, if it's only worth $140,000 and we tax people based on their property value, well, we don't get that much money. So I know what we'll do. We'll tell all of our constituents it's very important that we protect their property values, okay? And then we'll say one way we can do that is by not having too many cheap houses. And you guys don't want people moving into your nice neighborhood with little houses anyway, do you? So we're going to say that, you know, anybody builds a house in Tarrant County, it has to be a new build, has to be a minimum 2,250 square feet. Well, now that house that you could have bought for $140,000, $130,000, you're going to pay $250,000 for. You're going to have more house than you need, and you're going to pay more taxes. Well, this eventually, you know, there are people that want smaller houses. You know that exists. There are people that if you're like, do you want a 2,500 foot square house? And it's not even about the money directly. It's like, no, I live alone. I'm single, or we're married, but our kids are gone. And we just don't want that much house to take care of. Like a two bedroom or even like a small three bedroom is perfect for us. That's why they can't get one. But generally those people have more money. So what do? They go out and spend more money on the little house anyway, right? That's the boomers that are retired that want to sell their big house and buy the little house. They just pay. They don't care that it costs more money because they have money and they know they're only going to live for another 20 years. So that makes the little houses cost more. So now the new homeowner can't even, and this is all about local governments. For all the shit we give the Fed, and we should, this is all about local governments. The number one reason it's hard for a young person to afford a home today is a combination of what the Federal Reserve did. We'll get to them in a second. But it's mostly what local and county governments have done to destroy the ability for people to build inexpensive housing as starter homes. That's what it's from. Or to build inexpensive housing for people that are retired and don't want a big house anymore. That's what caused it. So to me, local government overreach, they enforce centralized control over communities. And to me, that is evil. That is your enemy. How about international bureaucracies? We already talked about the federal bureaucracy. The federal bureaucracy would be things like NIH, right? That would be part of the federal bureaucracy. Who's in the international bureaucracy, like the World Health Organization, the IMF, and even quasi-private organizations like the WEF, right? You will own nothing and live in the pod and eat the bugs, right? That's the WEF and Klaus Schwab, right? Like the evil these bastards exert over us. And again, I want to go back to what we've learned from USAID, a lot of this is an unholy cabal. And so, like, you'd say, well, like, the WEF, that's not paid for with your tax dollars. The fuck it's not. And a lot of what they want done is paid for with your tax dollars. So they exist here and they do have a lot of money, and not all their money comes from people being stolen from directly anyway. But they want this thing done over here. So they take this NGO and they say, you're going to do this thing. And they say, well, we'd like some money, please. No, just go to USAID. They'll give it to you. And they make a phone call. And next thing you know, that person's getting $2 billion a year to have housing for illegal immigrants, and the building's empty. I'm not fucking kidding. We just found that out in Texas. There's a company. They have this facility. And I don't remember if it was $2 billion. It might have been $2 million. It was millions of dollars. I think they were being paid millions of dollars a month to have this really great facility so that we had a place for illegal immigrants to be. And as bad as that would be by itself, here's the bigger problem. There's nobody there. The building's empty. That is a combination of international bureaucracy, domestic bureaucracy, and NGOs together as a cabal. They push a globalist agenda, and they have no accountability. Let's put it this way. Who is the World Health Organization accountable to? Who elected them? They have lots of power. What can you do if you don't like who the head of the World Health Organization is? As much as I think voting can be a scam, if you really want to get rid of a politician, and that becomes your individual goal, I want this motherfucker, and by the way, if you're looking for one to do that with, Lindsey Graham would be high on my list. I want Lindsey Graham gone. If I decided for the next 2 years till he's up for his next primary, a year and a half, whatever it is, that I was going to do everything under my power to get rid of Lindsey Graham, just one person, there's a very high probability that I could get his ass primary. Now, I don't know that I'll do it. I would support somebody who did, but it could be done. Who are you going to get rid of that way in the WHO or the who runs the International Monetary Fund? Who's in charge of it? Do you know? I don't know that anybody knows because it's so big. There's lots of people in charge of lots of different parts of it. You have the International Monetary Fund telling El Salvador, we don't like that you're buying Bitcoin. If you want to borrow money, you have to do what we say. Why the fuck do they care that El Salvador buys Bitcoin? Now, they said, we don't want you to buy it with the money we loan you. Oh, okay, fine. But the whole purpose of the International Monetary Fund is supposed to be to loan money to countries to help them advance and become more modern. And when somebody's sitting there going, hey, we have a whole shitload of resources to develop here, and we're good for it because the resources will pay for it. That's if you did what you said you did, but they don't, right? So we have the international bureaucracies. How about the military-industrial complex? I would say the best president that this country has had, that anybody living knew while he was president, was probably Eisenhower. And Dwight Eisenhower gave a very stern warning when he left office about the dangers represented by the military-industrial complex. So much so that I actually ran a poll on this, and most people didn't know who said it. Eisenhower said of NATO, when NATO was founded, if there is a single U.S. troop still in Europe 10 years from now, then NATO itself is a failure. Did you know that? Eisenhower, General fucking Eisenhower, the hero of World War II, probably to this day, one of the most universally loved presidents. The only reason you don't hear more about him now is because the people that were like, you know, working age when he was president, most of them are dead now because he's, you know, an older president, right? You know, you're getting back there in time. But overall, I mean, if you made a list of 10 people who were president and say, who do you have the least problem with? Not necessarily who's the best, but who do you have the least problem with? There's almost nobody that would tell you that had a problem with Eisenhower. And Eisenhower said the military-industrial complex is evil and can take over everything if we allow it to in his farewell address. We learn nothing from that, I guess. The military-industrial complex profits from fear, perpetual war. That's what it makes its money on. And you'll notice what starts to happen whenever we start to wind down war anywhere in the world, if the U.S. is paying for the war, that is. So there, as far as we know, are no U.S. boots on the ground. I have some skepticism with that with Ukraine. But there's no doubt whatsoever that reality is coming to the world about Ukraine. Ukraine never had a chance against Russia. Russia has used a lot of restraint. The one place, because Ukraine could not move them an inch out of the Donbas. They kept losing ground. Russia had fortified those defenses. And the Ukrainians went in to Kursk, north of the lines, and actually took a fairly large piece of Kursk. Well, the Russians had had enough of this shit finally, and they went full bore on them, including something, and you really should look this up. The Russians crawled something like 9 miles through an abandoned pipeline that was only about 4 foot high. They had to drill a bunch of holes, and like as they went, they would have to stop and breathe through the breather holes. They had to have oxygen. And about 800 Russian troops popped up out of the ground and just laid waste to the Ukrainian forces in Kursk. And there's a very small number of them left, and they're surrounded and holding out for now. And basically, Zelensky's abandoned them. And those guys are going to be wiped out soon. And there is no way in the world that Putin is going to agree to a ceasefire until that is taken care of. It doesn't mean I want it to happen. I'm telling you it's going, like the whole time I've been telling you it's going to happen. Right. So that's about to happen. Then there is going to be a ceasefire and this war is going to end, period. And even if there's still skirmishes or something, the giant multi-billion dollar packages of money going to Ukraine, that's going to stop. Isn't it funny that all of a sudden now we're trying to start a war with Iran? Because the military-industrial complex demands a certain amount of tens of hundreds of millions of dollars be spent on weaponry every year. And if you don't blow shit up with it, eventually your stockpile gets really big and you stop buying as much. It's interesting. And there will always be another war. There will always be. We have always been at war with East Asia. We have been always been at war with Eurasia, right? Like, and it just, in the story in 1984, if you read it, the pronouncement of who they've been at war with just constantly changes. And I think a lot of people that maybe are familiar with that concept, but don't really get the point. The point was that the people were required to accept what they were told, no matter how ridiculous it was. That was the point. And that the primary way that we profit in society today is from war. And so much of these other ways we profit without perpetual war, that wouldn't happen. So the military-industrial complex is your enemy. It really is. Now, there was a time when it would have been very hard for me to accept that, even though I knew it. And this is where I'd like to just give everybody a pause right now. If there's some group that I attack that you're mad about today, and think about it this way. There was a time I was a contractor for Lockheed Martin. Now, I didn't do anything directly to do with weaponry. I was an optical fiber specialist for them, and I was managing and building and upgrading their optical network in Grand Prairie, Texas, in a very large, there was over 10,000 employees there, right? A huge facility, multiple buildings. There were actually different companies there at one time, like there was Loral Vaught and there was Northrop Grumman and all. And over time, they were all conglomerated under Lockheed. While I was working for Lockheed and being paid fairly well to work for Lockheed, and at the time, I actually thought that I was going to stay there and go from contractor to direct employee, I would have had a hard time with that statement. That the entire military-industrial complex is your enemy. Why? Because I was earning my living from it. And if it shrunk, I could have lost my job. Didn't make me right. In fact, it made me wrong. And so if you're a teacher and you're mad at me over my belief about the education system, you're just in the same boat I was. You know, I get called anti-vax. I do not consider myself anti-vax. In fact, whenever I talk about vaccines openly, I get attacked more by anti-vax people than pro-vax people. But I get attacked by both. That's probably because I think independently. But my wife was a nurse for over 20 years. And whenever I said anything about any vaccine, she just lost her shit on me. And I would just let it go. 2 years after she left the medical profession, she was far more vaccine hesitant or skeptical than me, and to this day still is, because she knew more about the bad. But as long as she was the one giving children shots, she had to believe it was right because she's a good person. And that's what I was talking about doctors. I said they're really horrible people in their actions, but they're not horrible people as people. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about my own wife in this. My wife sometimes still to this day will have bad days, and she'll really think about it and think, all these kids that I gave these shots to, And I never told their parents that there was anything to worry about. And she talked about how when they started doing the Gardasil vaccine, that they had several girls that would come in and they would give them a shot and the kid would just pass out immediately. But they ended up being okay. It's just the way that it is, guys. I'm sorry. Next is the central banking and the fractional reserve banking system. They devalue your money and they create debt slavery. And I don't think that the people that are in charge of that system really fall under any of the protections I just gave for like doctors and teachers and stuff like that, and nurses and what have you. I think they know precisely what they're doing and they're very, very happy about it. Now, I'm not talking about the guy that works as a bank teller or something. I don't mean that. They're more like the nurse or the doctor. I'm talking about the people that are actually like on like Federal Reserve boards and things like that, that are printing the money, that are making the decisions. When the banks print money, which they do all the time, it's not just when they tell you the government did more spending. When you go get a mortgage on a property, the bank prints the money. Some of you have never heard me talk about this. I have to be short with it today because I only have so much time with a long show with all these topics. But what I mean by that is if you're going to buy a house for $300,000 and the bank says, okay, you're going to conventional loan $60,000 down. So you take $60,000, you write a check and you give it to the bank, and the bank gives you a check for the full $300 to buy the house, and now you owe the bank $240,000. What you think the bank did is they go into their deposits and they loan you $240,000 out of their deposits. They absolutely do not do that. They write you a check that's good, and the person you give it to, the seller, gets the money. They go off, buy another house, deposit in the bank, whatever. But the check was written on money that didn't exist until you agreed to take the mortgage. Hence, it's printed money. Now, where does its value come from? You might say, well, it comes from me and my willingness to repay the debt. Well, no, that's where the collateral is. It's in the property and your creditworthiness, right? You are backing the debt to be repaid, but you are not where the money got its value from. You're where the willingness for the bank to extend risk came from, and the risk of the bank is actually really minor because they gave you money that they never had in the first place. So if they write you a check for $300,000 and all but 60 of it didn't exist when they wrote the check, and so it's really a $240,000 check, that $240,000 of new money can only get value from one place, the existing monetary supply. Every time you hear about inflation, every time you hear about lending, every time you hear about these things, what they're really saying is so that we can have more money, we have to make each unit of money worth less than it was before we printed it. Right now, they'll tell you some stupid shit like inflation is going down and it's like under 4%. It might be 2%. We don't really know yet, but Trump's doing a good job. When we think inflation's 2 to 3%, it's more like 8 to 12%. In reality, they play all kinds of games with this and they do it at will. And there's an entire class of people in the banking system that their money is essentially free, or they're actually making billions of dollars on a sick, twisted form of arbitrage where they borrow the money and lend it right back to the government. So they borrow it at, let's say, 1% and lend it back at 2%. And they make 1% on infinity money by having money printed to be handed to them in the first place and then loaning it back and double printing it in a circle. I would say that is your enemy. There is no reason for this system to exist other than to enrich the banks themselves and to give the government the power through our friends at the military-industrial complex to prosecute endless wars. When your grandpa was in World War II, or your great-grandpa, depending on your age, and fighting that war, we were still on a gold standard. Now, Roosevelt did revalue the dollar against gold, hence devaluing it, and did a massive overnight inflation on the gold standard. But at least it was there. And as we were longer and longer in that war, the government started to run out of money. And the government eventually had to go to the people and say, it's very important that we win this war, and we need money, and we're out. And that's where war bonds came in. And people had to willingly say, I will loan the government, let's say, $400 today, and 10 years from now, they'll give me $500 back. And I'll do that for the purpose of supporting this war. Have you noticed that none of you probably have ever seen a war bond in your life? After 1971, the idea that you would even need such a thing was just gone. Of course, that's when Nixon closed the gold window temporarily over 50 years ago and put the central banks in total. They were already in control. This put them in total control. But what the government got out of it was the ability to, we need some more money. Here you go. But we need some more money. Here you go. We don't have any shit for credit. We don't care. Here you go. How do you think we could have an over 20-year-long war in the Middle East? Young people from this country being blown up, coming back, you know, with 70% of what they had before they left, and it just kept going and going and going, and we got nothing from it. We obtained nothing through 20 years of war in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Nothing. We got Osama bin Laden. Pretty sure we could have done that without 20 years of war. Pretty sure we could have done that. We got rid of Saddam Hussein. We could have done that anytime we wanted to with a smart bomb. We got nothing. $1 trillion gone. Our young men disfigured and killed. And we murdered probably over 1 million people combined in two countries. And we got nothing for it. And it was all paid for. It was all paid for with central banking and fractional reserve monetary. If you don't think that's your enemy, I don't know how you're still listening to me right now. Next, though, will be my final one for you. The biggest enemy of the people, anybody want to guess what it is? Anybody want to guess the biggest single enemy of the people? Who is it? What's the group? Anybody want to take a shot at it? When I say it, a lot of you are going to go, oh, of course it is. No, it's not lobbies. John says lobbies. Good guess. Lobbyists to me fall into all these other categories. So if you're a lobbyist for medicine, you're big. You see what I'm saying? Voters, you're so close, Tom. 229 Mick got it. The people are the greatest enemy of the people. The people are the greatest enemy of the people. Got it? I don't just mean the Democrats. The crazy liberals who want, you know, men and women sports and shit. Yeah, they're horrible. I agree. But in general, just the general population of the people is the biggest enemy of the people. Let's just, you know, think about it for a minute here. All right. Is anybody here unclear about big tech and what they do? They censor you. They spy on you. They sell you. No? You know that. Okay. Mainstream media. Does anybody here trust them, but you still watch them? And you still do trust. You don't trust them. But you do trust them when what they tell you lines up with what you want to believe. All of a sudden, they become a source. Big Pharma? How powerful would Big Pharma be if the average person was, I'm not taking a drug unless I absolutely need to? Just that. And then how powerful would Big Pharma be if people actually controlled their diet in a way that made sense and stopped eating all the food that Big Food sells? So that would weaken pharma and food in one go. If when you went to your doctor, you said, listen, doctor, my goal in life is to take as few drugs as possible. Unless you're the kind of doctor that wants to help me with that, I'm not coming to you. I'll find a different doctor. How much power would the drug companies have through the doctors in prescribing these drugs if the average person simply said that? How much? I will not take the drug just because you said you went to medical school. You want to assign a drug to me, I need to know what are my other options other than this drug? What are the side effects of this drug? What are the risks of this drug? And when do I stop taking it? Just those four questions. Is anybody here incapable of answering those four or asking those four questions? I didn't even know I was going to say those four questions. Those are off the cuff. If I can do it off the cuff, you can memorize them. The federal bureaucracy. Now, that is one that I will acknowledge that they could do a lot of things that are outside of your control. But one of the first things that you could do is stop believing it. And two, how much of enforcement is complaint driven? So if people would shut their fucking mouths and stop ratting out people, maybe this wouldn't be so much of a problem. The surveillance state? Is it really that hard to use encryption? Is it? Is it really that hard to use something like Above Phone instead of big tech? You know, social media, big tech, is it really that hard to use Nostr? It's not. You can keep pretending that it is. There's not enough people there. But if you were there, there'd be one more person, right? Local government overreach, that's one that the local people really are responsible for. It is very difficult to change who your federal senator is. Like, it takes a heroic effort to get rid of your federal senator, and it's pretty hard to get rid of a House member. And usually when you do, it's because there's a party swap. There's certain districts, they're going to be Republican no matter what. There's certain that are going to be Democrat no matter what. And then there's, like, they call them swing states. Well, there's also swing districts that historically go back. But it's still the same mainstream candidate. It's just one side or the other of that. But when it comes to local shit, if you vote, you tell me you vote and you hate your local government, why aren't you doing everything that you can to get rid of as many of them as possible as quickly as you can? In a lot of places, it's actually really easy to get rid of a mayor or a town council member. Really easy. I mean, it would take 20 minutes of work a week during election season, knocking on doors and telling people what the asshole was doing to get rid of them. That's all it would take. But nobody does it. Like, you know the food that's bad for you, but you eat it anyway. How many of your problems go away if you're just healthy enough to think clearly, but you won't do it? And I know some of you are getting really pissed at me right now. Okay, because you're like, but I do. Well, then that's great. But the reason you're pissed isn't because you do, because you already know if you are not the drone that I'm talking about, you already know that I'm right. But the problem is that we all still have some of these things that we'd rather have convenience and ease than freedom. We sacrifice our own freedom for convenience and ease. And a lot of us know this stuff is true, and we just won't look at it. Because it's too horrible. And the way I mean that is, it's like there's probably some movies that you wouldn't watch. And not because you think it's a shitty movie. You just, what it talks about is too horrible for you to look at. I can't think of the name now, but the one about human trafficking. I was really wanting to see that. I still haven't watched it yet. My wife's like, I bet it's a good movie. I can't look at it. I just can't bear to see it. And so there is some of that, but there's a lot of it. It's just more like, you know, it's just easier. It's just easier. Or if this is true, then all these other things in my life that are important to me are also that now I have to give those up too. You want to know the hardest thing to get an alcoholic to do? Join Alcoholics Anonymous, because then you have to stop drinking. Well, we have a lot of addictions. We're addicted to drugs, and I don't mean pot, and I don't mean meth, and I don't mean fentanyl. We're addicted to drugs being our solution in this country. Why is your health insurance so expensive? Because healthcare is expensive. You know, go see how expensive it is to get something like an umbrella policy on your property, which basically means if somebody breaks their neck or something, that you won't go bankrupt. It's cheap. Do you know why? Because the insurance company knows they can be profitable while only charging everybody a little bit of money. If you go buy life insurance, if you're healthy and 20, life insurance is stupid cheap. When you want to buy life insurance when you're 80, it's expensive. Why? Because you're going to die soon. I'm sorry if you're like 80 right now, but it's true. You might be able to be 95. You're still only going to live 15 years. Where a 20-year-old can expect to leave at least, you know, probably live at least 60 years. So this is a reality that so many of these things that cost so much money or cause so many problems come back to our health. And can we do anything about that? We absolutely can. Can you do something about the fact that the banks are stealing your money? Yeah, it's called Bitcoin for one. But it's also like investing in tools and skills. It's not going deeply into debt. It's managing your economics well that you don't care that they're doing it as much. There is nothing that is doing more harm to the people than the people themselves. We're either indirectly or directly allowing the majority of harm that's being done to us. Nobody makes you eat fucking Cheetos or Fritos or Ruffles or whatever, or Ding Dongs or Ho-Hos. No one makes you eat that. You didn't know that it was bad to have a high carbohydrate diet. Fine, you do now. Stop doing it. You don't have to be keto like me, right? You don't have to be carnivore like Ken Berry. Eat less than 100 carbohydrates a day. I promise you it'll be okay. Don't eat any food that's garbage. Don't eat more than 100 carbohydrates a day. Eat whole foods and cook your own shit. Is there anybody that can't do that? But you won't. But you won't. How many people that say they're poor and broke, if you actually analyze their daily spending, spend money every day on bullshit. Money every day on bullshit. I'm trying to get people to buy $5 a day of Bitcoin. It's $150 a month. The same person who will tell me they can't is going to go to Starbucks or an equivalent. Because I don't even drink coffee. You do something. You do something. And I know because when I was young and stupid, I did some things too. Spent a lot of time in bars chasing girls and drinking beer. That was, you know, a bottle of beer back then was in a bar was like $4 and a six pack was like $8. Well, that made a lot of sense. Too much beer plus too much money for the beer plus then a show for it, you know. But we all have these stupid little things, but it's up to us to say, wait a minute. If I'm going to listen to a show like Jack's and hear him talk about all these horrible people, all these horrible organizations, maybe I can't make it all go away, but shouldn't I at least mitigate everything that I can? Everything that's actually hurting me? I swear to God, guys, if I could just get people to take their health more seriously alone, we could drastically change the future for everybody in this audience. It's the single easiest thing that you can do. It's not expensive. Stop saying that. It's not hard. Stop saying that. You can do it. Stop saying that you can't. I don't care if you travel. I don't care if you have to eat out a lot. There's always a way to do it if you want to. It's up to you. Is there anybody out there that disagrees with me that the greatest enemy of the people is the people themselves? You can think about that while I wrap up. And if somebody says it, please put it in all caps. I don't have any questions or anything starred. And we're going to wrap up really soon. But I will hit that. If you disagree with me, it's not the people themselves. It's something else. Explain to me why, and we'll talk about it here at the end. Real quick, though, I want to remind you guys that you can help support this show no matter what you do. If you start your online shopping at tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com, you'll find all the products I recommend there. Amazon, Vivor are the two places you can find products from there. Today's item of the day is the Victorinox 6-inch semi-stiff boning knife. I first brought this to you about 2 years ago. It has become one of my best-selling products of all time. In the last year, 2024, it was the number three best-selling product on T-Spaz. And I sell a lot of products. I sell thousands and tens of thousands of products a year on T-Spaz. And to have one be in the top three and have zero complaints, period, that tells you something. But the reason I brought this around today is, one, it's on sale for 16% off. So I got a pricing alert. I'm like, yeah, that'll be good. But I had just done a post this weekend where somebody had made a roast out of the what they call the mock tender of a sirloin, which it looks a lot like a tenderloin. A lot of times you'll see sirloin tender bacon wrap like a filet, but it's not a filet, or mock filet they'll call it, and that's what it is. It's that particular cut. And what I said was, when you hear a steak, you know, somebody from like a cook or a chef or something refer to as a baseball steak, that's the cut they're talking about from a top sirloin. But I said in my post right where I talked about this, I said that one of the best things a person can do for themselves is learn to break down a whole sirloin primal or a chuck roll, either of those, or, you know, some other cuts as well. This is the knife. This is the best knife I have ever put in my hands for working with the majority of primals and subprimals. These larger cuts of meat. And when I was talking about eating better, and I said you can eat better and it can cost less money, this is one of the ways to make that happen. You know, a $25 knife can save you hundreds of dollars a year if you learn how to use it. And this is the best knife for the most people, for the most situations. Now, I have some other knives I recommend, some larger knives and things like that, if you're breaking down whole animals and stuff like that. But there's nothing that if you're going to start out with something already broke down to a primal, that this knife won't do for you. And for most things, it'll do it the best of what's available. It's also great for breaking down chickens and parting out chickens and things like that. It's the knife that I pick up and use more than any other knife in my home. And I, you know, I walk around with a $600 knife on my belt. And this $25 knife in my kitchen is the number one tool that I use for breaking down meats and cuts. The only knife that I probably use more is like a chef's knife because, you know, this is not the knife for like chopping onions or peppers or something like that. You want more of a straight blade than this curved blade. But for anything deboning, breaking down meats, this is the one you want. Check it out. I don't see anybody here that wants to tell me I'm wrong about the people being their own greatest enemy. And what I'll finish up with on that thought is I remember all the way back when I started the Survival Podcast. At the time, I was on quite a few like forums and things like that. And most of them I stopped posting to because when I started the show, I didn't want to give the impression that I was like trying to pimp my podcast. And I also didn't want to be lifting material. But right at the very beginning, somebody asked a question very similar to that topic. Who is our biggest enemy? Is it the Russians? Is it whatever? And I remember, and this was on Backwoods Home, when Backwoods Home had a old school, you know, bulletin board forum. And I wrote up a few paragraphs saying basically what I just said to you. It's us. We are our own greatest enemy. That point on, that thread blew up, and the consensus among people there was this is absolutely the case, including people that had said it was something else. When they read that, they said, no, you're right. This is what it is. In the end, we are the most responsible person for our own lives. I got sucked in young some certain things to believing the concept that there's no such thing as a victim. I don't believe that. There are victims. There are people who legitimately have been victimized. When somebody's walking down the road minding their own business, somebody runs up to them and shoots them for their wallet, they're a victim, right? There are things that happen that are outside of our control. There's always things we can do to make them less likely or be mitigated, but the reality is any one of us could get hit by a gravel truck, as I've said since day one, on any day. It could happen. There are times where things happen outside of your control. You can get an illness that you really didn't do anything. You just, you know, your poor luck of the draw from your genetics or something. You can be born a type 1 diabetic, and there's not a lot you can do about that. You could have a genetic predisposition to certain cancers. You can get fired from a job you did nothing wrong at. Like, and you can get fired at a point in your life where just getting another job isn't as easy. If you get fired at 28 and you were good at your job and it was just some downsizing, or you should have another job before you're worried about it. But if you're 58 and you're not ready to retire yet, it can be very difficult if you lose a job in that same circumstance to get a job that pays well. One of our best friends through the family, I remember he had basically the same job I did when I worked for Fluke. He was a sales VP, and he worked for Mattel, the toy company. All right. And I go, that's kind of a cool job. We sat down and started talking about, like, your job sucks. He goes, it sounds like it's exactly like your job. And I'm like, it is exactly like my job. You have reps and you have reporting, and it's the same shit. Even though I'm selling computer test equipment and you're selling toys, it's the same job, and it sucks miserably. I went on to do other things. He stayed with that job. And he said, I don't like it, but it pays really well. I've been there a long time, and I'll be able to retire. Guess what happened? They just decided one day, nah, we want to bring a younger guy in. So they sent him packing early. They had a beautiful house, and they did not live extravagantly, but they had some really nice things in their life. They had to completely downsize their life because he could never find anything that paid like that ever again. And he had to work about another 10 years before they were fully ready for retirement. So all of these things can happen. It doesn't mean that you're still not the most responsible for your life. And sometimes you made the mistake when you trusted somebody 10 years ago and you knew it then, and you're at a point now where you're kind of like, I'm stuck, and I feel for you, but you still knew it. Like, he still knew he was miserable. He would have probably been, when we had that conversation, and it was about 10 years before they got rid of him, he probably would have been better off making a decision then to do something different, when he would have had another 20 years of work in him, and a company's willing to take a bet on you with that far more when you've got like 6 or 7 in their opinion. It's just reality. We are our own worst enemy. What does that mean that we need to do? Take responsibility for ourselves. I would tell you that this audience as a whole probably gives less of a fuck about the egg shortage than most of America. I hear people all the time, thanks to you, I don't care. right? Grow some of your own food or buy locally or eat better. That's part of manage your money better. Manage your money like you're gonna need more than you think you're gonna need. Be disciplined. Get physical activity. Educate yourself. Take responsibility for the education of your children. Even if you don't homeschool, still take responsibility to educate them. Like my wife handles the homeschool stuff, but every day that I take the kids with me, I talk to them about deeper subjects. And I'm helping them to find more of a path toward maturity for themselves, not what I want it to be. That's education. Yes, your doctor will tell you stupid shit. You're the one that does it. You're the one that does it. You don't have to do it. Your doctor will put you on 5 medications because that's the perfect number for him in the end. Your doctor will send you a specialist when there's no real need for you to go to a specialist. You're the one that goes. Your doctor will order a litany of tests for you. And if you don't say exactly why am I doing these, if you have insurance, he's going to tell you to do them all. And if one comes up with a certain number, he's going to put you on a drug, but you're the one that takes it. They will prey on your trust, but you're the one that does the trusting. The banks will extort you, but you're the one that chooses to go into debt. And there's good debt and there's bad debt, and you're the one that makes that decision too. The education system will mislead you, but you're the one with access to all the information in the world today. You're the one that could be using a combination of the internet, YouTube University, and AI to educate yourself and podcasts and everything else, or you're the one that can just be spoon-fed. And that applies to everybody around you. So if you feel a little kicked in the ass today, I actually didn't even really mean to do that to you. I'm really not talking about this audience when I say the enemy of the people is the people themselves. But we all are still to a degree. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll be back something with more practical, hands-on, how to do stuff tomorrow. I don't know what yet. I've been thinking about doing another show on small livestock because I think that's one of the biggest freedom food things that there is out there. And there's truth is just not everybody's going to be able to do cows or goats or some or pigs or whatever. But just about anybody could, you know, pick up and start raising chickens and quail, for instance, or do a little bit of aquaculture or something like that. So maybe I'll do that, if not something else. Again, I appreciate everybody tuned in today. I will catch you tomorrow with another one. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. Better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.